Welcome back to the Lars Resort. Still a podcast with me, Larsy Watson, brought to you by Betson. It is spring and summer. We're late into April now, almost May. Kind of had a moment the other day when I realized how little is left of the season, and I freaked out. It's kind of crept up on me a little bit that we're just a couple of weeks away from the end of the Premier League season. Really, when you think about it, crazy scenes. Anyway, before we crack on with, the resort will continue as usual. We'll do our sort of, how's it going with this team and that team type of thing that we usually do. But before, we're going to crack into what I'm hoping will become a beautiful spring tradition for many years at the resort, which is one of my favorite things that we did last season, our big chat with Torkjestan Carlsen about his list of the top 39 young players aged 21 and under, which he compiles for ESPN every year. Now, for new listeners, Torkjestan Carlsen is a scout and football executive who has worked for various clubs around Europe, including Leverkusen, Hannover, Monaco, etc. and so on. I've known him for quite a long time. I've been discussing football with him for quite a long time, which means I've kind of seen him predict things and rate players over the years, and I've seen how many things actually come to pass, you know, how many of his predictions and projections work out, and the guy's not often very wrong. Obviously, hit rate not 100%, that's not a thing, nobody has that, but so Christian has an incredible eye for talent and an extensive network around European football. So as much as I am a contrarian and an argumentative know-it-all, you know this about me, Torkjestan is one of the few people in the world who I just kind of listen to, like no arguing or debating or being my contrarian self. I just try to pick up stuff and learn stuff, and it's an education every time. Now, because our chat ran long, very long, I've had to split it into a couple of parts. Three episodes is what I think makes the most sense to me. You'll get a complete rundown of the top 39 players aged 21 and younger in the world, some chat about his picks for the list, and in some cases, you know, where we think they might end up, because this really is very good prep for the upcoming transfer window. I think a lot of these guys are already linked here, there, and everywhere. Most of you guys, you know, balance of probability, most of you guys support one of the bigger English clubs, right? So the odds are that your club, the club you support, will be linked to one or more likely several names on this list this summer. So this is a great chance to kind of learn more about them. And anyway, the list is compiled by Mr. Carlsen, but he does also have like a committee of friends and contacts, some of whom work for some of the really biggest European clubs out there. Really biggest? Tremendous grammar, Lars. Well done. Some people who work for the biggest European clubs out there, who he runs the list by, so it's an informed and deliberate list. But if there is something you really disagree with, do dispatch a tweet in my direction to at Lars Everson, and we can have a discussion about it. The other thing to note is we did record this a little while ago. I had to do some editing and some stuff, so the publication ended up being put off. So we recorded this, I believe it was... was it the day after City went out of Europe or something? It was kind of that week, I believe. I think the only way that really affects anything on here is we were still living in a world where everyone were reporting that Amorim was closest to the Liverpool job, so we make a few references to that. Aside from that, I don't think it's aged out in any sort of way, so I think that's all fine. Anyway, I've been talking for way too long because there's so much good stuff to get into. Let us get straight into the chat. Let's look at the list and all that. Let's go. Okay, Mr. Torkjestan Carlsen, thank you so much for being back at the Lars Resort. It's an exciting thing for me, hopefully an exciting thing for the listeners as well. I'm not going to do a huge intro because I think I just did. I think I've recorded this later on. We have so much to talk about. Let's just crack in. But I do want to say thank you to your face for being here yet again.
Thank you for inviting me, Lars. It's fun.
Sorry. Yeah, well, let's make it fun. The expected fun should be, the XF should be sky high on this conversation, because you have... again, you've done your annual list of the 39 best players in the world, aged 21 and under. Given that your background is mainly being a talent scout, I mean, you're the perfect person to do this sort of thing. More appropriate person than quite a few other, like, content people who make lists about stuff on the internet. I mean, some of them I can, you know, this is a good list. This is a list worth checking out. and it's also something I'm always very excited about. But I feel like we've done this before, but I have to ask you very quickly some methodology questions here. Why the top 39 players? That seems like a random number to go for.
It does, and I get that question pretty often. It's a very simple explanation. First year we did it, I think, 2020. So this is the fifth list, basically. And back then it was quite a natural cutoff point, because if we would have gone on to 40, 41, 42, so on, it would have been hard to find another
cutoff
point. So that was natural back then. And we just stuck with it. 39 is a decent number.
Yeah, it's an absolutely number. And I guess top 39 can sound like a vague and ambiguous... I mean, what is top anyway? Is it the 39 best? Is it the 39 players with the most potential? How do you sort of judge these things?
It's supposed to be weighted more in the favor of performance and experience, more so than potential.
Yeah.
Which would be a slightly different list. So basically then you'd just be projecting future performance.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a mishmash, but I think if I were to quantify it, I'd say 75% is probably performance, experience, and 25% would be potential, roughly. Okay.
So there might be some names on here that are maybe not the names that would turn up on the most exciting talents, but young players who have actually been playing and actually performing and actually doing the things, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I guess leads us, maybe that's unfair, but it leads us into number 39 on the list. Because, it's a trite old saying that in every crisis lies an opportunity, but I think it's true. And I think in the Newcastle United injury crisis, there has been opportunity. And there has been opportunity for one Lewis Miley, who makes the list at number 39.
Yeah, there were many candidates for 39, because obviously there would have been, this year at least, I think 7 or 8 of the names that I would have wanted to have on the list. Mm. But with a bit of shuffling and, soul searching and sleepless nights, I sort of had to obviously present one final list. So, now I'm not answering your question, but I thought just for background.
It's not a bad idea, actually. You're doing the presenting job better than me at the moment, because you're right. We should, before heading into the list, touch on the players that you're really annoyed you couldn't find space for. Like, which are the toughest cuts to the list?
Yeah, and it should also be kept in mind that this list was published like a month ago or 3 weeks ago or whatever. So certain players would have, would have done exceptionally well after the list had been published. Mm. And that I could not have necessarily foreseen. But there were names that were in the kind of final draft, a couple of Barcelona kids. I don't know if we should kill the suspense of bringing up the names now, but we may as well do Pau Cubarsí.
Not on the list, yeah.
He's not in the list. He just, I think he made his debut in January, so there was a little bit small sample size there. Yeah. Fermín López could have been another one. Fermín, anyway. And Alexander Pavlovich by Munich. Another player who's kind of, from November and on, has really kicked on. But basically, we're trying to, judge the player's performances on based on May last year until beginning of April this year. So, throw in a couple more. Ilya Sabarni, Georgi Sudakov was another shout. So, some maybe Chelsea players will be missing out here that have been doing particularly well over the last weeks. But anyway, okay. Lewis Miley, let's go back to...
Lewis Miley, who did business make the list. Lewis Miley.
Yeah.
What was your thinking of putting him on the list ahead of some of the names you just mentioned? What makes you excited about
him? I think, age is a factor. Yeah? Mm. I think, being promoted into the team just as he's 17, right? Maturity in his play, which has impressed me, relational play, how he links up with other players. Mm. And you know, basic skills, you know, good touch, and he can spin away from opponents, hard to mark, he's a good pressing player. So there's a lot of kind of modern, typical football terms there that will certainly be overused in this podcast.
Yeah, of course, but they're relevant.
Absolutely. But looks, I think, 17-year-old is just pushed into the side. Lot of pressure. And I think in some of the games, like around Christmas time, he was one of the better players. Possibly the best player for Newcastle in a certain period. So, well done to him.
And there's two things that springs to mind for me. First of all is, well, we'll never really know. But it does, from the outside, certainly, it doesn't seem like it was the plan all along to give him this many minutes. I mean, he was thrust into it because of all the injuries, which is a heck of a situation to put a 17-year-old in, that you have to be one of the guys carrying the load for an ambitious, you know, top-half Premier League team at that age. And by the way, there's no one else who can do it. Like, this is on you now. And secondly, there are some positions where I think I become, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I become even more impressed if you can actually make an impact at a young age. Like, you've seen quick technical wingers you put in, they get past the fullback a couple of times, you get a lot of hype, you know, this can happen. But a central midfielder playing fairly regularly in the Premier League and holding his own and not looking out of place at 17, that's quite extraordinary.
Yeah. No, I think that was pretty much my reasoning. And there's a bit of work to be done on the physical side. He still needs to build up a little bit, fill out. Might want to get on the ball a little bit more. I think I saw kind of his average touches were quite on the low side. But again, Eddie Howe, the way he sets up the team, might not kind of favour that kind of attacking midfielder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think he's he's there for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on, number 38. Interesting one. Benjamin Sesko is all the way down in 38. He's on the list. He's someone who has been kind of rated as a star to come for quite a few years. 20 years old now, has got his big move to Leipzig, or is at Leipzig. If a couple of years ago, would you expect him to be higher on the list than he is now? I mean, we've talked about the projecting into the future is obviously very, very difficult, but he feels like a name that's been around for a while that maybe we were hoping to be even higher at this point.
Yeah, funnily enough, he makes his first appearance in this particular list. Although he's been on the horizon and he's been debated, and he's one of the names that my panel of experts, my sounding board, keep pushing. You need to put Sesko in there. Sesko. Now, these are mainly scouts, a couple of sporting directors, and I send them the list, my kind of draft, and then they send it back with remarks, or we have a phone call or whatever, and I get the feedback. But I think they, as much as they are experts and they do this for a living, they have a tendency to look at potential is the one thing that they've got in mind, because they are obviously thinking about resale value and all that kind of thing. So for those who are pretty obsessed about potential, he's a must have. Now, we are still waiting for Godot to a certain extent, because it's his first season in the Bundesliga. He had a spell just after when the league restarted, scored I think he scored 5 goals after the break, had a nice little streak there, but it's the consistency. And well, I mean, physically everything is there. He is quick for his size. He's got great muscular legs. Picks up pace with the ball. You know, he can outpace defenders. He can play on the break for a guy who's like 190 plus. But it's kind of doing it week in, week out, and scoring with consistency. Now, in previous reports, I've been pointing out his heading, his aerial game, has been slightly disappointing. because he's a bit of a poucher. He finds the right spaces, but his aerial, his heading technique has been a bit on the disappointing side, maybe, or late to develop. But that's coming along, too. So yeah, I'm pretty optimistic that we are seeing kind of maybe like the proper breakout there.
Yeah, because you mentioned earlier that there are some football terms that we might end up overusing in this conversation. I have a phrase I use, probably overused when talking about players, is that he has all the tools. You know, a player that has all the tools, physically, technically, that you need to really fulfill your position on the pitch. And I feel like this applies to him. Like you say, heading can get better, but someone who has his size and his speed and is a good finisher will probably score a ton of goals in his career, like if he's playing for a half decent team. But there is, it's funny to me, the fact that he came through Salzburg. So much of what we're saying, it kind of feels like we're discussing another tall striker who's been through Salzburg. Like there's a big sort of Erling Haaland energy here, albeit at a lower level. Someone who has both size and speed, someone whose heading could be improved. And maybe someone who, if you want to find a strike against him, he's someone who could be more involved, I think, in the overall play. Like you say, he's a bit of a poacher, which is, you don't see that often in the modern game. But so, yeah, the sort of, is it mean to call him like the wish.com Erling Haaland? Is that something we could do?
Well, there were comparisons were inevitably drawn, but I think Haaland is so extreme in all his attributes. I mean, he is, okay, Sesko might be, in terms of physical power, might be an 8 out of 10. Haaland is 10 out of 10. In terms of ball carrying speed, penetrative speed with the ball, might be, again, 7, and Haaland might be 9. So I think most of these kind of, and Højlund as well, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the
similarities there.
Yeah, well, and that's the left foot in addition. So, look, I think there'll be more comparisons there. There's a new Messi coming in the top 10 and everything. So I think those comparisons are inevitable, especially for media. Obviously.
Yeah, well, that's what we do. We make, you know, we try to simplify things and make sort of superficial. Anyway, next guy on the list at 37 feels apt today because we're recording this the day after PSG knocked out Barcelona from the Champions League. And number 37 on the list had a very good game, I thought, yesterday. Bradley Barcola.
Yeah.
Was lively. And he's had a few disappointing nights in the Champions League. So for him, I thought that was good to see. Someone who's part of what I would call PSG kind of becoming more of a serious football club, not just kind of throwing money at random celebrities anymore and just trying to build a team, trying to lean in on youth a little bit. And he seems to be a big part of that.
No, I think you're right, Lars. I think yesterday he made his proper first step on the great stage. I think people now, you know, he'll get recognized on the streets now after yesterday, instead of being like a bit part player. But I think it's been a useful player for PSG this year, although he hasn't been an undisputed regular.
Mm.
But he brings kind of, especially in the second half, he brings a lot of energy. He's unpredictable. He works hard. He has, he's versatile. He's extremely good at, he's unpredictable on the last third. He can go left, go right with pace and with power, and good prospect. I think he was one of those I wasn't quite sure about because he hasn't quite, as I said, until very recently, hasn't quite sort of established himself as a absolute regular. But that, there is a lot of raw material there, Lush.
Yeah, he's also had a couple of raw materials, another phrase I love using, yeah. I think he's also a player who's had, get some sparkling water in that. This is great sort of ASMR, isn't it? The sound of sparkling water going into a glass. It's tremendous.
You want some?
Yes, please.
Okay.
That's very kind of you. He's had a couple of games in the Champions League where he's missed a lot of chances. That's sort of one of the first times I really noticed him. But I like that you flag up the energy he brings, because this PSG team feels different to the ones that came before. Whether it's already a better team, I mean, maybe the Tuchel team that went to the final was even better, but they're building now a team of young players with energy and with legs, and it's not just a team of random superstar anymore. And he seems like he's a very, you know, a typical part of that whole transition for the club, and an exciting prospect for sure. Number 36. I'm glad to see this guy here. I mean, I guess this isn't such a niche opinion anymore, because he's kind of being linked to with big moves and stuff. But he's an unglamorous addition on the list. Number 36, Jarrad Branthwaite. One of, I guess, probably quite a few people to really come out of this Everton season with his stock improved, you know. He's done a heroic job at the back there for Sean Dyche's misfiring Everton team.
I think on the basis of the whole season, I think he's been one of the better players indeed. And he's a little bit of a throwback centre-back. I mean, he's not particularly good on the ball yet, although it might be a case that he hasn't been able to show it, because Sean Dyche's teams don't usually play out from the back. But he has a good diagonal, he has a good switch ball with his left foot. A little bit, agricultural sometimes.
agricultural defender.
In his way of dealing with opposing forwards. But the one thing which has kind of become his trademark is the tackling, the clean tackling, which I think is the highest among under 23 defenders in Europe. I think he has the highest success rate of tackles.
Sounds good.
But tackles, for the educated listener, would know that tackle is not necessarily something you want a defender to do, because it means that you might be late, or you are taking a risk, or you would have wanted to deal with the situation without going to the floor.
Yeah.
But still, it has proved effective. Now, whether Branthwaite will, whether it makes sense for him to be linked to Man United, to whoever else, I think the Man United link is the strongest one, at least from the media.
Yeah.
Whether that makes sense, are you getting, well, depending on who, whether Ten Hag stays or whether a new coach comes in, who would presumably be a modern coach with kind of wanting his defenders to play out from the back. Now the question is, do you get a new Harry Maguire, or a young Harry Maguire left-footed, or do you get a defender who can kind of slot into a team that likes to build from the back? That I'm not so sure about.
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, you've already raised it, and I feel like you've already answered what was going to be my next question. The potential for him moving to a big club is the thing that's hard to say, but as you touched on, it's really hard to judge what is his limitations and what's being asked of him in the system. I'm not sure United fans would be hyped for a Branthwaite-Maguire dream team at the back there. Is that the way to return United to glory? I'm a little bit uncertain. Staying in England, at 35, it's Harvey Elliott, who's, currently the mood is a bit bad around Liverpool after the last couple of games, but he's been a big positive. He's played a lot. Again, he's getting his minutes, and he's really contributing to what I think, when the dust settles, will be seen as a good Liverpool season overall.
I think he really he's really come along in the last months. He kind of started off as an impact player with an impact. I mean, he really made a difference from the bench early on in the season, and now he's become like not indispensable, but I think, look, in terms of wanting the ball, always being available, his movements between the lines, quick technique, very, very good at controlling the ball quickly. Gets out of tight spaces. The ball striking abilities we all seen, can strike a good set piece as well, and has extreme energy.
plus the one find here, which I usually pick out one or two stats or metrics per player. And the one that kind of I looked at there was the successful dribbling, which was excellent. Mm. It was up in the 60%, I think. Oh. And but there are too few of them.
Yeah.
But I also kind of speculated in the piece that might be due to the fact that he usually plays in field. He plays as a number eight.
Yeah.
And it's tighter and you don't want to lose the ball, so you don't take on players as much as you might do out wide. So that might be a reason for it. But anyway, it does show that he's good at getting the ball, he's good at keeping it, and he's good at giving it.
Well, I guess that's the thing that surprised me, being more of a layman here, is that I just look at his stature and think, well, you probably want to use him out wide because he's quite slight physically. But he's done so much better at number eight this season when he's played there than I thought he would do. So that's been my sort of big positive surprise with him.
You might, I think, given his talent and given, you know, his reputation, he came through at Fulham when he was 16 or whatever, 15 even.
Mm.
And now, what is it, 21? You might have expected him to be even, to have pushed on even higher up this list, but he's still in, and he's getting better and better.
And we'll see what kind of role the next Liverpool manager will have in mind for him. Of course, we're expecting some changes to that squad over the summer as well. 34, I'm very interested to learn more about, because I would say, for me, out of the top five European league, France is the one that kind of gets neglected a little bit. I don't watch enough Liga. So, Lenny Yoro, centre half from Lille, I am not that familiar with. Please educate me.
Well, 17, plays as a regular.
Mm.
In a back four. I think he's got very, very few shortcomings. They might be on the tactical side, but he's quick. He can jump. He can head the ball. He can pass the ball. Can't exactly remember the stats, but he was high up, I think, in the 80% tile of successful forward passes. So he's not just giving the ball out to the fullback or to a ball-playing centre-back alongside you. He's playing through lines there.
Hmm.
And there's also the aesthetical aspect. I think, you know, he's very, very elegant.
Hmm.
Plays with his head up, looks good. Physically already, you know, equipped like a player well into his 20s. It's another potentially world-class French centre-back. I think he's got Real Madrid written all over him, to be honest. I called this on Tchouaméni, I think, after the list in 2020, when he played for Monaco. He wasn't even linked to Real Madrid. And I said, this guy has Real Madrid written all over him. And the same goes for Yoro.
Well, I mean, we just mentioned Ineos maybe looking at Jared Branthwaite as the solution for Man United. Should they not, given that they have a presence in France and should understand this market, is there a chance they could get in there and steal him? Or do you think he has bigger things in mind?
I think there's always a chance. I mean, Lille is a selling club, usually. Although they, you know, they operate very well. They're chasing a Champions League spot this year, as usual. I think the one thing that might swing it in the favor of English defenders is the fact that they've had a year or two in the Premier League, and you kind of feel comfortable with them dealing with the intensity of the Premier League. And I don't know. I mean, he might be better off staying at Lille for another year or two. He's not in a rush at all. But look, given the quality, it's natural that the biggest clubs in Europe will be chasing him already in the summer, I think.
Well, that's exciting. What is also exciting is that at number 33, we have come. I mean, we talk about this chat and this list being an annual tradition. I feel like having a discussion about the player who is now in 33rd place has also been an annual tradition. Like, not just that he's on the list, but that you have to have a prolonged discussion about him, because you have put Ryan Gravenberch as that's probably a bad pronunciation.
I thought it was rather good.
I tried. I went a little Dutch there without.
You went without very much
Gravenberch.
Dutch.
Something like that. He is at number 33 anyway, and he's one of the sort of more discussed members of the list, I'd say. And it surprises me that he's still this young, because he's been talked about for so much for so long, and maybe that is part of the reason why he's still on the list, even though he maybe hasn't had 100% of a convincing season. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I think he's an ever-present on this list. I think he even featured on the first edition. Loic Lage, it's in one sense it's a bit of a wild card, because maybe on merit, based on the past two seasons, he doesn't deserve to be in.
Mm.
But here comes this one, my sounding board, who are, most of them are big fans of Gravenberch. Now, I did the Dutch thing, by the way. Two, they still believe in him.
Yeah.
And I think one of my referees there said that, we'd be ready to pick him up.
Yeah.
Works for pretty big European clubs.
Mm.
And we've seen what he's got. Okay, it's Ajax. And he was in a very kind of well-organized Ajax side under Erik ten Hag that played exceptionally well. It was a brilliant team. And he was one of the standouts. But we've seen that he's got a great touch on the ball. We've seen his dribbling from midfield. We've seen his long, short, mid, long-range passing. We've seen the elegance, you know, the class. He can strike a ball. We've seen all that. That cannot just go. So it's a bit like a deja vu from last year, because that was.
That's the conversation we had.
Yeah, it was. And but again, why is it not coming out in full force? Okay, this year I can understand that, you know, going straight into a Liverpool side and bossing is a hard thing to do. You know, there's competition for places, and he has had some quite a lot of playing time. I don't think he's disgraced himself, and in certain games he has looked very, very good. But there's maybe too much inconsistency here. You know, he'll have one good game and then a mediocre, poor game. Then he'll have a very good game, and so it goes. So he's a bit of an enigma, Lars. But
yeah,
it's a great relief that he won't be in the next list next year.
you don't have to deal with him anymore. He'll have aged out.
And we won't need to have this conversation.
But yeah,
again,
I guess the thing to remember again, still just 21, and all the things you just said, the tools, he has the tools, the raw materials.
Yeah.
At some point, it'll emerge, possibly for Liverpool, we'll see. But staying on Liverpool, who seem to have a pretty heavy presence on this list, at number 32, Conor Bradley has gone in, which is a pretty extraordinary rise. I mean, not a player who would have been anywhere near the discussion a year ago.
Well, I felt slightly at odds with myself, because, you know, we started the podcast with pointing out that some players were omitted because of lack of exposure.
Mm.
They've only been kind of involved in the past 2 or 3 months. Same goes for Conor Bradley. But I just think I had no choice there, because the impact he has made has been absolutely phenomenal. I honestly can't remember the last time I saw an academy graduate. Okay, he played in League One last year with Bolton, fair enough. But basically making his debut in the Premier League, I think, in December, and just hitting the ground running like a beast and never looking back. And I said beast because it's the fearlessness and the attitude that kind of impresses me the most. Although he can cross the ball fantastically, we've seen he dribbles, he catches up with attackers because he's got the speed to recover. But he keeps doing it like as a matter of course, you know, he's like he's entitled to it. And sometimes with young players, you just kind of, you know, I've been in dressing rooms, you know, when kids have had the debuts, and the coach would say, just go out and play, which is a cliche, but that's what he does. You know, he's not affected by playing for Liverpool or in the Premier League, or never mind the opponents. So I just think he's phenomenal, and it's a challenge to face for the next coach, because what do you do with TAA? Do you you put him in midfield, or I mean, you cannot leave Bradley out if he. I mean, it cannot be a fluke.
Yeah.
Because he, okay, as with the rest of the team, he has dipped slightly in the past weeks.
Mm.
But it's normal.
Yeah.
And it's proven over extensive period of time that he has the consistency already to be a top Premier League right back. So how can you keep him out of the team?
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting one. Also, I mean, it obviously hasn't been confirmed, but the media speculation is that Ruben Amorim will be the next guy, which is kind of interesting, because he's always played with wingbacks, hasn't he? So he'll certainly have options there, whether it's Trent Alexander-Arnold or young Connor Bradley. I think the Trent into midfield movement will gather momentum externally, at least. We'll see how that goes. Interesting stuff. Staying in roughly the same part of the world, at least, in sort of that part of England, we're hopping to Manchester at number 31, another rapid riser, if you can put it that way, a player who was not part of the discussion last year, I don't think, but I know for sure. You're trying to derail me now with this, like I've said something. We're not, lips are sealed, very good. Kobbie Mainoo at 31. Not something we would have said before the season started, but then there was talk after preseason that he'd been, you know, that they were excited about him. But still, for him to be doing as well as he has been doing for an extraordinarily dysfunctional Man United team. And I feel like that's the difference between him and someone like Conor Bradley, who obviously has been fantastic, but he's coming into a team that's performing reasonably well. This United team is a total mess. Yet this 18-year-old midfielder has come in and done a great job for them, which is quite something, I think.
Some of the the scouts are very excited about him, having seen him from the age of 14, 15. And so there are already a lot, you know, great expectations to, you know, to see Mainoo in the first team. And I did watch a bit of academy football last season, and a lot of the stuff that he's been doing well this season is done obviously even better at academy level, which is no surprise. But you can see that he's, I think, again, attitude here. I mean, because I think it's quite obvious that most of these players have excellent mental faculties, otherwise they wouldn't be on the list. But I think that same goes for Conor Bradley, Lewis Miley, being thrown straight into the Premier League, with the expectations that come with it. I think it's something we don't understand from not being professional players. And I'm pretty sure if he had played from the start of the season, now he was injured for 3 months, I think.
Yeah.
He might have been even higher up the list. And incidentally, just I think a day or two after I filed the piece, he was called up for the England team. And then he did extremely well for England too. So he might have been marked up, might have climbed a few more spots if the list had been submitted later. But I think he's... it's the continuity of his game, which I like. He's always there around the ball. He's active, wanting the ball. He's never shies away from responsibility. Good at interceptions, I noticed. He gets into quickly into situations, so he's obviously mentally very, very sharp too. Now, what we'd like to see even more of, switch balls, long passes, because that I noticed at academy level he can do.
Okay.
He spreads them, you know, like effortlessly. But Now, there might be a little bit of timidity or whatever. You should give the ball to Bruno Fernandes no matter what. But he can do all that stuff. And I think I put in my... how he can improve a bit, that we'd like to see him shooting more or finishing more.
Because he can do it.
Yeah, and I think a couple of weeks later he scored another belter.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he read my column. Probably not, but
be nice. I have the list in front of me. Come on. I'm
but it'd be nice if he'd be like, I'm going to prove this guy wrong now. And
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. Maybe he read, I'm just 31. What is this? And they says they can shoot more. Off we go. ESPN says must shoot more.
Would be worrying if you listen more to me than Erik ten Hag, though. But who knows?
Maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing. We'll see. We don't need to derail the conversation here. I have my suspicions of this is just so weird, the United thing. Let's not get into it. This is going to be a long enough pod as it is. We can at least say that. This has not been a vintage Man United season. This has not been... Well, it has been memorable, but not for good reasons. But certainly one of the positives to come out is that you do have a couple of young players there who you can absolutely envisage being a big part of that team for many years in the future. Speaking of... that is accidentally a good segue, because I was just scrolling on my list there. I did not know what was coming next. But speaking of clubs who are chaotic and have not had a good season, but have some good youngsters, we're heading to Chelsea, where you put Mal Augusto at 30, who's, you know, one of the players who, again, my impression is he's looked pretty good during what has been an absolutely just chaotic, difficult, traumatic season for the team.
Might be easier for a fullback or a wingback in the sense that you are not quite so kind of, you can do your own thing to a greater extent out wide. But I think he's been one of Chelsea's best players this season. You know, the stats back that up in terms of assists, crosses, accurate crosses, defensive duels, he scores high. And I don't know, what do you do with Reece James when he comes back? I mean,
without sounding cruel, because of course injuries are very sad, it doesn't seem like he's ever going to be able to stay fit, Reece James. It's very, very sad for him, but... what you do is probably get him off the wage bill and get someone in who can stay healthy. And Mal Augusto is better at staying healthy and looks very good.
Yeah.
That seems to be the answer for me. I don't know. What do you as a... Actually, that is an interesting little thing. As a sporting director, you have a guy who's established as your number one right back, right wing back, and who you know when he's good, he's very good. He has a lot of injuries, he's on a big salary, and you have a young guy like Mal Augusto behind him. That's an interesting conundrum for the sporting director of Chelsea Football Club.
Well, James is homegrown, isn't he? So that might accelerate their desire to sell him for obvious reasons. But Reece James is also so good. I mean, he's one of the top fullbacks in Europe, so... But I guess their dilemma is a little bit more intricate than the Liverpool one, because you can shift TAA to another position, whereas Reece James... Or I think Mal Augusto could play left-back as well, if needs being, but there's competition for places out there too. But I think Chelsea's general idea with this spending spree was to have two quality international players on each position. Now we might debate the kind of logic behind that, but that's what they got, and at least in certain positions, and especially at right back, right wing back. And I think it's a dilemma that you are happy to live with. I mean, it's not as though you wouldn't have wanted either of them.
Damn
to
you,
be
Mal Augusto. Yeah. You should have gotten someone much worse. You
know? Yes, exactly.
No, it's one for them to figure out. And I suppose with all the injuries they've had this season, they have needed double coverage in all the positions. 29 is a very exciting player who I haven't watched a lot of times, but I've seen him a couple of times for Frosinone, and has really livened up really every... Like I said, I haven't seen that many Frosinone games, but I've seen them a couple of times, and he's someone you notice, and it's Mattia Sulle.
Showed positive sparks for Juventus last season. Wasn't quite ready to be a regular. Also did great things at academy level for Juventus. I think he first crossed my horizon like 3 or 4 years ago. And I wasn't quite sure, is he really gonna make it? It looked a bit like too much of a ball obsessed player. That, you know, his attention switched when he was out of possession. But he has really worked on his game, and he's, I think, in terms of impact, look at goals, assists, set pieces are brilliant. Playmaking skills, cutting in from the right. He makes things happen. Can play through balls. Shoots well from distance. I think he's still waiting for his first Argentina cap, unless he was brought in on the last match days earlier in the month. Or in March, might well be, but anyway, he's not established there, but that should be the next step. I expect him to return to Juventus next season and possibly be a regular.
And he has the sort of thing of, he's equally comfortable going both ways, you know, in terms of one-on-one duels.
Mm-hmm.
I always think players who can go on either side of the defender, that's such a weapon to have, because it just... Yeah. When you know if a player has a clearly dominant side, the defender will know, okay, you want to go this way. Pasula seems more random with him. He can go whichever direction he wants to, and it's a very, very difficult thing to defend. Interesting for Juventus. It seems to be a thing for Juventus. I mean, that seems like it's maybe a tangent we shouldn't let loose, but they seem to really be producing, well, to have young players and to make that a priority with the team going forward. Kind of an interesting to see, and it feels unfamiliar after many years of them prioritizing bringing in like old free transfers on big contracts and stuff. Refreshing sense, change of direction for them, maybe?
Well, the talent has been there, and I think there was a shift now. Before this season, there was no pressure on Champions League or winning the title, although they look fine to qualify for the Champions League. And I've seen the inclusion of many new faces coming from the academy, which I think for a club like Juventus, which is the most supported club in Italy, and there's always a lot of media attention, I think giving, you know, priority to your youth is a good way to go.
Yeah, so we'll see him play for them next season. Number 28, back to Chelsea, and Levi Colwill, another player who has managed to look impressive at times, even though the team has really struggled.
I felt a bit kind of in two minds about it. I don't think his performances for Chelsea have kind of warranted top 30. But another thing here is that, okay, there's 2 months of Brighton here, which in the kind of should count as well. And at the under 21 championship last year, England ran away with the trophy. I think he was possibly the best player in the tournament. Mm. He was so good. And well, football if you count under 21 as youth level, that should also be a factor. And we've seen how good he can be at Brighton, and I think it doesn't necessarily have to be to your detriment that the Chelsea team hasn't worked, especially defensively. Now seems to be some hope that is being sorted, but I think, look, if things go well for him, he should be an England regular. I see him ahead of Branthwaite, for example, as a left-footed centre-back. If you want to play in a back four, I feel more comfortable with Colwill than Branthwaite.
Yeah, for sure. No, but interestingly, he has ended up playing quite a lot of fullback this season because of Chelsea's sort of slightly weird squad building that's left them like with 157 centre-halves. and you've ended up, is that an advantage to him that he's versatile? How would you spin that? That it's an advantage, it's shown that he's versatile and can do it, or is it a detriment to him and his development that he's at a team that's using him out of his best position a bit?
He probably just wants to play. Mm-hmm. And as long as he's not uncomfortable with the role, which he isn't, it's not in his, you know, he's not a left back by trade, but he can deal with it. And he gets his match bonuses as well, I guess, which is a factor.
Yeah, he does. Now, at 27, I'm excited to hear your take on this guy, because again, not someone I've seen that many times, but the few times he has been on my television screen, he has looked very lively. It is the PSV wide player, Johan Bakayoko, who is now linked with a lot of clubs, and again, having only watched him a couple of games, I can understand why, because he's a fun player. He is full of energy, full of stuff. You know him better than I do.
Well, classic modern inverted winger, if you like. Strength, one against one, change of pace, acceleration, and ball striking. And also good crosser of the ball, which is not... might not be so common for wide players these days, but he's a good crosser. And live wire, and physically is very well developed. So I think he's might be the only player from European leagues outside the classical top five leagues.
Yeah, because we had a question about that actually when I put out something on Twitter about us recording this at some point. About the dominance of the bigger leagues. I mean, he seems to be the exception, I guess.
There were a few more names from Belgium, Netherlands. You might have put in a wild card from... somebody made a shout for Sudakov in Shakhtar, Ukraine. Shakhtar Donetsk. Now, as long as the list is kind of based on performances, you also have to accept that... you kind of need to prove yourself at the highest level, which plays against players in the Netherlands. For example, that's why I didn't have Hartl from Ajax, for example, who could well have been in.
That was one shout, actually, without wanting to interrupt us too much. We did have a tweet from Matt on Twitter who flagged up Verbruggen, Hartl, Beraldo, Mosquera, and Nusa, he thought should have been on the list.
Well, news I don't agree with. I think it's just his potential. If it's a list of 50 top under 21 potential based on potential, I would no doubt include him. But he's I think he's just too inconsistent at the moment. Like, he's good in certain areas of the game. He's almost like unplayable when you get to the last final third.
Yeah.
But there are still many, many aspects of his game still to be polished. But Bakayoko, I think what swung it for me, and I should also mention that I have had Ajax players here before, but that would have been on back of a very good European run.
Yeah.
Which is not the case this year. Although they're still in the... or did they get knocked out of the Conference League? But they should have been knocked out by Bodø/Glimt had it not been for that unbelievable handball decision, thanks to the Greek ref. But anyway, enough about that. But no, Bakayoko has been performing well also for the Belgian national team, which was a factor here.
Lastly on Bakayoko, he's been linked here, there and everywhere. Where do you think he will go and what kind of place do you think he should go to? Those can be different questions.
No, I think he could play anywhere. I mean, top choice would probably be somewhere like Bayern Munich, or very, very good German side as a second step. Could be a good option. But I'm not sure financially whether these clubs are in the market for a player who will probably cost 40-50 million by now. But
you like the idea of him taking a second step rather than going straight to the...
I think he might even be fine going straight to the Premier League. But I guess, you know, no two players are alike, and mentality and the professionalism come into play here as well. But obviously, Man United tried with a left-footed winger from from Ajax. Didn't work out particularly well. Paid, I think, close to 80 million. And that might keep some clubs, might make some clubs think that, look, let's pull the brakes a little bit on players from the Netherlands, because it is difficult to judge players from Eredivisie, because every team attacks. I mean, even the bottom teams play Ajax or PSV or Feyenoord, and they still attack, and you get lots of space, and physically it's not on the same level as the French or Italian or English leagues or Germany.
Interesting. Well, moving on to number 26, not someone who suffers from lack of playing high-quality opponents, because he has very much played against good teams this season. It is Pap Sarr of Tottenham. Rangy central midfielder. Covers a lot of ground. I like him a lot. I'm glad he's on the list.
Tottenham season might be a bit of a weird one. Look, they gone from absolutely brilliant to rather disappointing within short time spans. But overall, it's been a good season, and he's been one of the, I think, discoveries, if you like.
Mm.
Might be a player that you appreciate more when you see him live, because he does a lot of work off the ball. Again, another very good presser of the ball, so he's always alert, he's always close to the action. I like his discipline, which is kind of surprising maybe for such a young player.
Mm.
But look, I didn't know an awful lot about him before he came to Tottenham, but even the times when I saw him just coming on, I thought this guy's interesting. But he has the basics, and there's very little to, I think, in this high energy team. I think he suits the team very well, and he's maybe you want to see a bit more goals from him from midfield, because he does get into positions. But look, just carry on and you'll be fine.
Yeah, and that for me, just as a person of the Tottenham persuasion, the thing that I value a lot as a fan watching him is that he can cover so much ground, which the way they play under Ange is just incredibly important. You need all your guys to be able to run, in particular to have someone in those central areas, because they do get caught out a bit occasionally, and they leave spaces where there shouldn't be spaces. And having someone like him who can cover so much space, I think that papers over some of those cracks occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Tottenham just look a lot better when he's on the pitch mostly, yeah, which is... Yeah. For a 21-year-old central midfielder who wasn't really part of the first team picture last season, that's quite an improvement. So that's cool.
Yep, let's do a split there, I think. The full chat, as you can imagine, was just too long. Could not be one episode. That would be crazy. Nobody would get through that. So we'll split it into three. That was the first third. Thought that was good. Lots of interesting stuff in there. Always an educational thing. Always interesting. Much more to come in the next episode, which I'm going to put up. Like, I'm going to just do this bang, bang, bang. I think, like, tomorrow or something. There's one, two, three over 3 days. I think that's the way we'll do it. So check your podcast app check your podcast app of choice, whether it's this one or that one or the other, tomorrow, depending on when you listen to this. Certainly if you listen to it on the day of publication, tomorrow there will be another one. Yay, check it out.